So this is the last installment, the last podcast about Galus, about Geula. And I've tried over the course of the past 3 weeks to take a long view, to make a wide lens, because if it's too telescopic and it's just about the events of Tisha B'Av per se, I think, first of all, it's a little bit difficult psychologically. There's a barrier, because events are so far in the past, because some of the elements are so far into us and our culture, Korbanos, Malchus and monarchy. Of course we believe they'll be restored, and of course we believe that with the different world, Hashem will give us a different consciousness, Leiv Chadash, a different way of viewing things, but we're still in this world, and it's hard just to turn on the morning, because many of us never don't live in Israel or haven't had all of us actually were born into a world in which we didn't have Israel. So we've built a narrative that of success and a narrative of acceptance. So I've tried to broaden it. Take a view of Galus. What is Galus? What does it mean in Jewish history? Is it all terrible and dark? What is Geula? And how does this comprise the kernel of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So what I'd like to do in the next couple of minutes is Erev Tisha B'Av here. I'd like to just summarize and provide a panoramic survey of some of the things we discussed. And in particular, we'll help people to summarize some of the ideas, pull it all together. And for those who haven't heard some of this shiur and just want to listen to this one, it's a nice little, hopefully a nice little synopsis. Hopefully it'll be successful. Hashem created man. We don't know why. And he wanted man with his free will to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to build a life under the influence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the commandments, basic commandments, respect for life, recognizing theologically Hashem, and building a moral lifestyle both at an individual level and at a social, societal level to reflect a compassionate Hashem. For 2,000 years, that didn't work. That experiment went sideways. Humanity consistently lost track of Hashem, investing divine essence in idols and seasons and planets and oceans. And because they didn't imagine a one God who was all-powerful and who had created this world and had calibrated it for human prosperity, they could also not imagine a moral God. The gods of antiquity were either hostile or apathetic, but they certainly had no interest in human prosperity. They could be bribed, they could be convinced, but they didn't have an essential, their essence wasn't a caring and compassionate God. So after humanity failed to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose one man who discovered him, who found Hashem, sensed moral spirit, and chose him to build a nation and to start a family and thereby build a nation and to live for these values. We were chosen to represent Hashem and to inspire the world to higher ground. That historical arc, which is inevitable, built into history, is called the Arc of Redemption. Jewish history is a trajectory of redemption. We are on that arc with a couple hiccups along the way until we betrayed Hashem repeatedly during the two Batei Mikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash was, one could say, a systemic collapse, without getting into the details of these Gimel Chamuros, how they related to Nevuah. I've talked about it in the past, but it was a total collapse of the entire religious structure. The second Beis HaMikdash was more muted. Remember, the entire environment was more muted. We saw that it was ending. We knew it was ending. And the strife and the pressure and the tension and the civil war and the hatred torpedoed it. Probably the hatred was a function of the stress of knowing this Beis HaMikdash would not succeed because so few Jews, so few people returned from Babel. Now, what happened when we left for Galus, which is really the topic I try to distill? On the one hand, we were punished, right? There's consequence, there's punishment, we failed at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we weren't kicked out of history, we weren't kicked to the curb, to the margins of history. Our mission continued, but now the terms of that mission were totally different. now we wouldn't just live in the land of HaKadosh Baruch Hu underneath his presence and broadcasting these important messages. We broadcast these messages and live these messages in a very, very strange anthropological experiment called exile, diaspora, where Jews are sent across this world, hosted by other nations, and we are, Baruch Hashem, literate. We are, Baruch Hashem, the people of Hashem. We are, Baruch Hashem, people who are networked, and network always helps people to earn a living. And we challenge humanity to higher ground. That situation is combustible. That situation causes anti-Semitism. The other aspect that causes anti-Semitism, without getting into the details of the manifestation of anti-Semitism, is that when we left Golis, remember this didn't happen before, all of a sudden, two other religions started to emerge. And there weren't pagan religions that could easily be wiped off the face of the earth. They were advances towards monotheism, Christianity, right as we left Yerushalayim, Islam, 7th century. And because we, Baruch Hashem, rejected those religions, we were hated for that. Who knows, had we stayed in our land? Of course we wouldn't be hated, because we have the right in our own land for our own religion. But who knows if humanity would have arrived at a more accelerated pace to a purer blend of monotheism. Is Christianity, or our Christianity and Islam, also a byproduct of us fracturing history? Because we abdicated that position in Eretz Yisrael through which we were infusing this earth with the presence and the knowledge of Hashem. And it was working in the first Beis HaMikdash, it certainly was working. So are we to blame for this partial monotheism, this contaminated monotheism? Christianity is literally theologically contaminated. With Islam, the contamination is much more marginal. Another prophet, long after prophecy has subsided, so we can't accept that. The sense of a God who's angry, remember describing Hashem as angry, is tantamount to heresy. So even though the Muslims believe in God, they believe in a God that's just so far from the correct image of a God that it's essentially atheism. And despite all these challenges, our mission continued. And despite it all, we thrived and we shaped humanity against all odds. Now, when I say we shaped humanity, it took a while for it to happen. Humanity itself sunk into about, round off, 1,300, 1,400 years of darkness. This was the punishment for humanity, for having ransacked the Beis HaMikdash and having, and that's why Christianity and Western Europe was more affected, the offspring of Rome. Islam cycled ahead, because they weren't to blame for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Slowly but surely, around the 1300s, the 1400s, there was a renaissance of the human spirit. People began to shine the light of reason on their frightened world. They started to build civil societies and imagine enlightened forms of economics and politics. It was an awakening of the human spirit. This awakening of the human spirit is part of the drive towards Mashiach. Mashiach is not a particularist event. It's not just a national event. It's a national event of restoring the Jewish people to their homeland and restoring them to that broadcast booth where we can infuse everyone and inspire them with the knowledge of Hashem. The rise of democracy, the rise of capitalism, the rise of civil society, the renaissance of the human spirit. All of these events, every major event in world history, has to, by definition, feed the Jewish ark, because the Jewish ark is the ark of human history. So these events are important on their own, but they're also contributors to the advance of Jewish history and redemptive history. In the past century, all this came to a head. There were convulsions of history. Communism rose and fell. Nazism rose and fell. And sadly, hundreds of millions of people lost their lives. But within all that tumult, the people of the land, the people of Hashem, came back to that land, and the process of redemption began. Some view it one way, some view it another way, some have some terminology, some feel that you should say hallel, you shouldn't say hallel, but everyone agrees that something is happening. And the convergence of millions of Jews upon their country, their ancient homeland, means that history is now lurching forward and is accelerating towards its endpoint. And when history accelerates to an endpoint, there are convulsions, there are spasms, their Chevle Mashiach. That is the arc of Jewish history. And we look back on Golis, not with shame only, although we look back on it with pity and regret and sadness for all the suffering and all the hardships that were never meant to have been in these foreign lands, and all the people who suffered. It wasn't meant to be. It could have easily been averted, but it wasn't. But we also sense that after this galus, we've emerged with great pride at having defended HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence against all odds and retaining his presence in this world where there's so many forces that sought to eradicate it, chas v'shalom, to eliminate it. Galus and Geula, where galus is not a parenthesis. It is part of the arc of Jewish history. It is a different narrative. The original narrative had us driving redemption from our homeland. Now that we broke that narrative, we drove redemption from other lands. Galus and Geula are two parts of the same historical narrative. While we're in galus, we have to be very careful, on the one hand, to fervently yearn for that final redemption, to live with schizophrenia, to live in our own world and embrace our world, but imagine another world and imagine a different place that represents our ideal. So we're meant to stoke redemptive fervor. Hashem wants us to anticipate, but he also wants us to be lodged in reality, to confront our world, not to use redemptive fantasies and escape from current confrontation and current issues. But living through galus and thinking about geula, understanding galus and living it is part of Jewish identity. And that's why Tisha B'Av is not a day to mourn. It's a day to construct Jewish identity through the lens of history. Yom Kippur is a day to construct Jewish identity through an internal lens of piety, relationship with Hashem, mitzvos, failure, recovery. Tisha B'Av is a day of Jewish identity. We build that identity through expressing all the regret, but through that regret, recognizing how special we are, how chosen we are, our mission, and how faithful we remain to the mission, even through all that dark suffering. Have a meaningful fast, everyone, and this Amir Tishem should be our last Tisha B'Av.